Fantano here, internet's busiest music nerd, and it is time for another edition of the Needle Drop Podcast, our weekly review roundup podcast where we go over some of the best and most important segments on our respective YouTube channels of the week. In this episode, we are going to be going over new album reviews of the latest records from Atlanta rapper Jid. His new DiCaprio 2
album
is pretty fantastic if you're into fast flows and witty bars. Also, the New York jazz outfit Onyx Collective has a pretty captivating tribute to New York's Lower East Side on their latest release that you absolutely should hear my opinion on. Tyler, the creator of Odd Future Wolfgang Kill Them All fame, has seen fit to drop a new Christmas-themed EP that I will take out to the curb. And also, we are going to be talking about the new 6ix9ine project, Dummy Boy. Tekashi 6ix9ine, in prison right now currently, I still believe, has dropped a brand new record of very hit-or-miss songs. You will hear all of my thoughts on that, along with brand new track reviews of new cuts from Grimes, as well as Chance the Rapper. We also will be hitting you with a few exclusive extra segments from our very well-known Let's Argue series on the Fantano Channel 2. So get ready, get set, let's go. Bam. And it is time for a review of the new Jid DiCaprio 2. This is the latest
album
from Atlanta native and Dreamville signee Jid. Following up last year's The Never Story, an album that while it did underwhelm me, it did turn a lot of heads in the hip-hop community. And without a doubt, the flows and the lyrics on this record did put a lot of raw talent on display, but the lack of strong songwriting, coupled with Jid really wearing his influences on his sleeve, did kind of make it difficult to love this album for me and see a definitive way forward artistically for Jid in the future. One of his most obvious influences is actually one of his most popular contemporaries, Mr. Kendrick Lamar. And I'm not sure how much of what I'm hearing in Jid's music is an actual direct influence or copy from Kendrick's music, or if it's just a matter of coincidence in that both Jid and Kendrick happen to have some pretty dynamic flows and high-pitched nasally voices. I know they both occasionally favor some pretty weird left-field cracked vocal inflections too. On top of it, there are spots even on this mixtape where I hear some Kendrickisms from the instrumentals, from some of the vocal effects and pitch shifts. I don't bring any of this up to discount or delegitimize Jid necessarily. I guess I'm just saying the commonalities that I'm hearing here are just too many for it to be just a mere accident. And I think copying an idea and being influenced by one of your fellow contemporaries is one thing. What you do with it, how you spin it, how you flip it, how you define it to be your own is another. Whether or not you can pull that off to me is what defines a copycat from an actual artist. And if anything separates Jid, not just from Kendrick, but from nearly everybody else in the contemporary hip-hop field, it's most definitely his approach to lyricism and flow. Take one of the teasers to this project, 151 Rum. Structurally and lyrically speaking, it's not one of the best tracks on this entire record, doesn't have as many quotables, doesn't really have a strong hook or anything like that. It's just kind of this one massive blocked out verse with a few refrains of 151, 151 Rum. On paper, you could say it's a one-dimensional track, but the way Jid approaches flow on this cut, the way that he breaks up his flow into numerous phases on this song, provides quite a bit of variation. The vocal switches, the rhythmic switches, not only are there quite a bit of them, but they're all really impressive. I think a lot of this
album's
appeal can be boiled down to one of the introductory tracks on this thing, Slick Talk. The song features a mystical, futuristic boom-bap beat that, despite its old-school roots, does not sound stale at all. Instantly catchy flows on this thing, a pretty decent singing voice, and way too many lyrical gems to name. Jid just throws them out one after another as if they're like nothing. This song truly lives up to the title because the wordplay is deadly sharp at points. Thankfully, this song, like much of everything else on DiCaprio 2, what makes it so good is really just kind of on the surface. It's right there in your face. Just great instrumental choices, great flows, great vocal performances. Clever, 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 clever. It's not super abstract. It's not bogged down in a pompous concept. Okay, okay, okay. But can you play it backwards? I'm sure you could, but I don't know if it would change much. Whatever. Jid's creative word assembly and his flawless execution are essentially what makes DiCaprio 2 so great. And even though he's a really technically sound and talented rapper, the way he displays his abilities, it's pretty tasteful, not so flashy that it's annoying or obnoxious. It's like he's taken the raw, straightforward, hard-hitting vibe of a mixtape, but has given it the lyrical depth that makes it sort of brainy, but simultaneously you can listen to it casually. Just look at the lyrical banger Westbrook, which features a roaring hook from ASAP Ferg. Jid completely blows up on the last leg of the song, saying, "Okay, I'm fired up, I'm really fired up." That moment's pretty intense. Jid and J. Cole go toe-to-toe on the next track, the song Off D's, which features two of the most intense verses on the entire record. J. Cole really ties it up nicely in the second half, did not foresee him keeping up with Jid at the pace that he does. The song Off to Zoinkies just oozes charisma. He raps so smoothly over this instrumental that is a nice blend of trap and soul and jazz, upping the intensity of his flow at one point of the verse at this block of lyrics, which I absolutely loved. At the midpoint of this thing, Jid throws out a few mellower cuts with some mostly positive results. The song Working Out is gorgeous, it's luxurious, it is blissful. Though the song Tied with Black and LMA, I did find to be kind of grating, mostly due to Jid's cracked voice, the weird rhythmic pattern of his flow, the kind of tedious back and forth of the Love on the Rocks narrative, coupled with all of the annoying references to phone screens and social media. I mean, I guess that's very much how love plays out these days, whether it's going good or bad. But maybe Jid's portrayal of the situation is so good, I'm annoyed because I feel like I'm in the middle of it. If we're talking gender dynamics, the song Strawberries I thought was much better, which is a really beautiful track about not just loving your significant other, but also kind of being their support system. Being there for the women in your life in general through the traumas and relationships and hardships that they suffer through. There was one bar on this track that stuck out to me about men just generally needing to learn to be more sensitive and not be so insecure about it. The song Hotbox is kind of another typical stoner anthem with a somewhat muddy mix. However, Jid's lyricism and the animated vocal performances of Method Man and Joey Badass were kind of enough to make the song shine anyway. The fantastical flows continue on the song Mounted Up. With all the vocal and rhythmic changes Jid lays into this track, the song feels like a workout. I'm hitting the treadmill. I'm hitting the ropes. I'm flipping a tire over. I'm doing pull-ups. And the song Despacito 2 is a pretty gritty and hard-hitting finish. I mean, overall, this is a great project. It's probably not as ambitious or as conceptual as Jid could probably go down the road, and for sure there's still going to be some listeners who continue to dismiss him because there are some Kendrick Lamar parallels there. I would say there are even some Lil Wayne parallels to a lot of what Jid does too. But you know what? The rhymes, the flows, the beats, the songs, they're all generally really quality. Regardless of what else out there it kind of sounds like. On top of it, I kind of get the feeling that Jid isn't even working at full capacity on this thing, because all in all, this is a pretty raw album. It's not overly polished, and a lot of what Jid pulls off, it's almost like he's just doing all of this casually. As great as some of the bars and performances on this thing are, I would not at all be surprised to hear Jid completely blow this project out of the water within the next 2 years. And hopefully that ends up being the case. I'm feeling a light 8 on this thing. Transition into the next review. And it's time for a review of the new Onyx Collective album, Lower East Suite Part 3. This is the debut full-length album of New York jazz outfit Onyx Collective, who had been building up to the third installment of this Lower East Side series with a couple of EPs, both of which made for some pretty raw and abstract jazz releases. Some really rough recordings, some fusion grooves, occasionally vocal snippets being laced into the performances too. In the third section of this series, though, the Onyx Collective seemed to forego all of those weird bells and whistles in order to focus on their best recorded and most straightforward compositions yet. This record basically consists of a lot of short but evocative vignettes, most of which are in tribute to the personality and intensity of various spots in New York City's Lower East Side, whether it be FDR Drive or Delancey. There's also a track on this thing referencing the all-too-common eviction notices in the area given the rising rent costs. And even though there are different sources of inspiration for every track on this record, many of them end up sounding like the soundtrack to the most intense film noir piece imaginable. It's like every scene is screaming with tension and low-down grooves. Moving through these tracks is like stepping over a bunch of dead bodies strewn throughout a room, or a really dense crowd of eccentric dancers swinging their way through the Black Lodge. There are moments on this LP where similarly avant-garde jazz records come to mind, like Black Satan the Sinner Lady from Charles Mingus, where some of the compositions here sound similarly strained, but simultaneously the musicians have like this really loose and fluid connection to one another. By contrast, instrumentally, this album is also much more stripped back. It's really just kind of some drums, some bass, a sax. Maybe on a track you get two saxophones. But the relatively simple instrumental build on this record does not stop the band from conjuring some pretty strong moods. For starters, I kind of love the very curious and sour bass and sax harmonies throughout much of Don't Get Caught Under the Manhattan Bridge, which come off very puzzling, very strange. And the way they sync up with the drums and lock into these tumbling music passages, it's like I'm watching a crowd of people fall down an escalator in sheer horror. Very slowly. Then there are some very synced up horn leads on the track Delancey Dilemma, which sounds like two cars caught in rush hour traffic trying to outmaneuver each other to get to a destination first. It's like an impossible competition that kept me on the edge of my seat. I wish there was more to it. The strange horn harmonies do not end on the track Battle of Bowery. In fact, they get kind of militaristic with its marching snare drums in the background. I love how progressively the song goes on. It gets looser, more messy, more chaotic. And there's something pretty menacing about the track Rumble in Chatham Square too. The song essentially sounds like a fight scene in two parts. One section with very defined bass and sax melodies kind of trotting and thumping their way over some very sparse drums. It's like listening to two gangs feel each other out before the fight really gets started. Like the Jets and the Sharks dancing around each other with knives. Eventually the drums get more busy, the bass starts droning away, the sax starts howling out dramatically. This is like the moment where the fight is actually going on, and a lot of what's happening is lost in this messy cloud of violence. The closing track I also thought was pretty awesome. It's a very interesting mix of just sounding like some very smart metropolitan New York jazz, but simultaneously it kind of progresses to this very odd and destructive place. Overall, this LP does contain some great tracks, some great moments, but it does leave a little bit to be desired sometimes. Mostly in the writing and development department. The opening track, for example, Onyx Court, for all of its scattered drums and droning bass and super sinister sax melodies, compositionally it doesn't really add up to all that much. The track eventually fizzles out, like everyone in the band before practice took an Ambien at the same time and now it's suddenly kicking in. There are a handful of other brief and kind of underdeveloped cuts on this record that I could see my way to overlooking if they somehow phased into or segued out of some of the longer or better cuts on this record, but unfortunately they don't. And then there's the cut Magic Gallery, which wasn't really one of my favorite compositions to begin with at the start, but as it progresses, it's like the song just kind of falls further and further into this totally drunken chaos. Despite my complaints, though, and kind of being left wanting more, I mostly enjoyed this record. Occasionally, with a song, it does feel like the band are kind of building a bridge to nowhere, not really coming to a strong conclusion. But when this record is great, it's pretty captivating. I love the band's wild attitude on this album, their kind of reckless demeanor. Also, the way that in their music they're able to embody both the highs and the lows of New York City. And that the band are able to successfully borrow from the classic sounds and artists that the city is known for and build it into something a bit stranger, a bit weirder, more modern. I'm feeling a light to decent 7 on this one. Before we get into the next review, let me give a shout out to one of our sponsors, the good people over at The Ridge Wallet. They make these fantastic metal-plated, convenient, compact little wallets that fit snugly in your front pocket. Get rid of that old, disgusting, bulky leather wallet this holiday season, either for yourself as a gift or for someone that you love. Great gift for dads. I got mine one. He enjoys it quite a bit. Hit up ridgewallet.com/Fantano and use promo code Fantano to get 10% off of your order. Again, that is ridgewallet.com/Fantano. And thank you. Here's the next review.
And it's time for a review of the new Tyler the Creator EP. Music inspired by Illumination and Dr. Seuss's The Grinch. This is a new EP from West Coast rapper Tyler the Creator, former Odd Future, Main Brain. He is fresh off releasing one of the most critically acclaimed rap records of the decade, Flower Boy.
Tyler has also been producing music for the upcoming Grinch movie soundtrack as well, but I guess the inspiration he had for this new movie did not end with his work directly with the film, as he's now gone on to release his own Christmas and Grinch-inspired music with this new EP here. This thing is a pretty short collection of tracks. It's 6 songs, 10 minutes. And honestly, the music Tyler produced for the Grinch movie soundtrack, what I've heard of it, I didn't really care for. And I can't say the music that has landed on this new EP is any more fulfilling. In fact, the tracks on this thing I think might be even more awkward and weakly assembled. I mean, this project mostly starts off promising with the song Whoville, whose title is obviously a Seuss reference, but the sound of the instrumental sounds more like stiff hip-hop drums mixed with some Peanuts Christmas Special pianos. Suddenly, this intro cut transitions quickly into the next full song on the album, Lights On, featuring Santi Gold, as well as Brockhampton affiliate Ryan Beatty. And the song essentially sounds like the worst karaoke at a holiday party that you want to leave as soon as possible. I'm not sure what I dislike about this song the most. Is it the rickety beat? Is it the cheap and icy 80s synthesizers that sound like a knockoff of something out of Wham's Last Christmas? Or is it the vocals, all of which seem like they're coming from a totally different place in terms of style and recording and mix? Santigold's soulless talk singing throughout the first leg of this cut sounds like something out of a really bad high school play. Then there's Tyler's really little nasally raps that he places throughout a few points in the song. Meanwhile, Ryan has one of the best and clearest vocals on the entire track. He kind of sounds like a young Justin Timberlake. But what exactly is the story and the theme that these three individuals are playing on this track? I mean, are they connected together somehow, or are they all just kind of musing about wanting to come home, or wanting someone to come home, or missing home? I don't know what it is, but somebody feels like they're playing third wheel here. Somebody's the third wheel. Following this is the track Hot Chocolate, which I never could have imagined that a song could ruin one of the best beverages ever conceived. Calcum with that cocoa fofo. But here we are. The song starts off cute enough with these jazz loops kind of locked into a groove for the intro. Little glockenspiel melodies plinking away in the mix too. Not the first time you're going to hear that on this record, believe me. Then comes Tyler awkwardly rapping and singing about marshmallows and 2% milk and frickin' cinnamon. But then it gets worse from there with a feature from this Jerry Paper fellow, whose singing for the rest of this track is awkward, moany, sounds vaguely off-pitch. It's like I'm listening to a tone-deaf Stephen Merritt of the Magnetic Fields. The song Big Bag is a quick rap motif where Tyler, in a few short verses, kind of tributes the Grinch stealing gifts from the Who's in Whoville. Talking about his green skin and throwing the presents in the bag and breaking into the house. Sounds like something that could have been on the Grinch soundtrack, but maybe he was kind of just throwing together a demo here and it would have been something that could have been further developed had it actually landed on the soundtrack. But since it didn't, he's just kind of releasing it as an odd or an end on this EP. I mean, it's fine while it's on. It's not one of the worst tracks on this thing, but it's so brief and underdeveloped, I couldn't really call it a highlight. The following, When Gloves Come Off, is yet another awkward meld of second year high school jazz band jazz mixed with a bit of stiff hip-hop percussion, and then a dash of Christmas music mixed in there too. The groove vaguely resembles that of Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On, like it just needs a little more oomph and some horn hits. Oh, and a way less sloppy instrumental performance too. This is another moment on the EP where Ryan Beatty's vocals appear, but his singing isn't nearly as impressive as it was on Lights On, and I feel like that may partially be because this song feels even more demo-ish than the previous couple of tracks. Like, Ryan and Tyler are just kind of throwing some raw vocal ideas out there on top of the instrumental to see what sticks and maybe listen back to it. I mean, their vocals certainly don't come together all that well, and the track doesn't really sound finished. If Tyler were gonna throw together a bunch of, like, random demo-ish Christmas tracks, I wish that he would have just kind of come clean about exactly what this EP is. The closing instrumental, Cindy Lou's Wish.
I really don't know what to say about it. Maybe Cindy Lou's wish was that the EP should be over, because somehow it's even more unlistenable and awkward than the intro track was. Yeah, I'm not really sure what to make of this EP, honestly. I mean, I would say that for Tyler, this is him backsliding, or that this is him faltering, or kind of him losing his way, but I feel like in order to make that assessment, I would have to get the sense that he actually worked on this EP and put as much effort into this as he would a track on Flower Boy. And it's incredibly, incredibly obvious that he didn't, as it mostly just feels like he's slapping some tracks together in order to quickly cash in on the holiday spirit. I'm feeling a strong 3 to a light 4 on this thing. Tran,
why are you so mean? Everything you say is mean. You're like the Grinch, but for music. You're the Grinch of music. Nobody likes you.
Transition into the next review.
And it's time for a review of the new 6ix9ine record, Dummy Boy. 6ix9ine, or Tekashi 6ix9ine, is a New York rapper who has quickly grown to be one of the most polarizing and controversial figures in the genre today. And I feel like that has so little to do with his actual music. I fear that I'm not going to be talking about the music of this album as much as I would like to. In this review, I mean. And the reason I say that is I feel like 6ix9ine's appeal and his continued popularity, very little of it comes down to the quality of his songs. I think you could argue pretty objectively in the grander scheme of trap, outside of 6ix9ine's hyper-aggressive vocals, hyper-aggressive and violent lyrics, and his hyper-aggressive instrumental choices, there's not a whole lot about his songs that are all that special. And in a way, I think he's realized that with how he's tried to change things up and diversify his sound with this new record over here. However, we will get into that deeper into the review. But despite the severe lack of substance in his songs, combined with the fact that since he's gone mainstream, he's kind of boiled his tracks down to the most cliched elements possible, 6ix9ine's stock in the world of hip-hop has risen exponentially. And yes, you could say, Anthony, that's kind of the case for most artists in mainstream hip-hop today. You just oversimplify your sound to the point where you're reaching a larger audience. But very few artists out there today, period, have the extracurriculars that 6ix9ine does, which I think are actually much more integral to his major success. And what I mean by that is 6ix9ine, like no other artist today, can grab a headline with something ridiculous that he said, something stupid that he did, another progression in the ongoing saga of his legal troubles, which now has reached a fever pitch with him and people connected to him being held on racketeering charges right now. Please keep in mind this review is being shot toward the end of November 2018, so I have no way of knowing where 6ix9ine's legal battles are going to develop from here. Another thing that needs to be said in terms of Tekashi 6ix9ine's promotional prowess is that the guy is a one-man meme machine. Everything this guy says and does turns into an online joke, resulting in Photoshops and macros and viral video edits. And I will not deny that even though I don't enjoy a great deal of 6ix9ine's music, I love the memes that surround the guy. If a new 6ix9ine track pops up on Spotify, I will most likely listen to that when I have to. Meanwhile, if a new much dank video edit of some interview that he did, like, turns up in my YouTube feed, everything is dropped and I am watching that right now. And that's kind of the beast of the modern internet age and media consumption. You don't even really need to be a fan of something to be consuming something. Because a great deal of people who are listening to and watching and reading every single thing Tekashi 6ix9ine is doing are mostly there just to kind of gawk at it. Basically, the man has built himself up to be the biggest freak show in hip-hop today. One that other major artists can't seem to turn away from or ignore despite his ridiculous antics, as Tekashi has landed multiple features from Kanye West and Nicki Minaj on his latest project here. So to kind of wrap this section of the review up in a bow so I can actually talk about the songs on Dummy Boy, I'll say that yes, I definitely think 6ix9ine would not be as popular as he is today were it not for his grating, eccentric, and out-there personality, all the ridiculous stuff he does in interviews, on social media, which gets remixed, shared,
edited again and again and again and again. And don't get me wrong, the guy has some catchy songs, the guy has some legitimate hits. But I think if his Day 69 tape showed anything, it is the limitations of making music that is simply in your face and not really much else. And that's one more thing that makes 6ix9ine kind of a unique beast in hip-hop right now. That he is truly, truly a singles artist. Like, yeah, sure, he has this project, he has the Day 69 mixtape, but honestly, the primary function of 6ix9ine is to just come out with singles. Anything full-length he's put out so far just kind of sounds like a random collection of singles. And every single 6ix9ine has dropped this year has been almost like a cultural event. And in a way, an extension of his internet attention-seeking. The fact that he has a track on this thing featuring Bobby Shmurda on a phone from prison rapping on the cut was never not gonna turn heads, never not gonna make headlines. His track Fifi with Nicki Minaj, which showed an incredible instrumental and vocal change, also a really colorful and sexy music video, was never not gonna turn heads. The fact that Kanye West is on this thing was never not gonna turn heads, and also the fact that 6ix9ine goes like Latin pop on this project with his first big single with Anuel AA. Not only did this song do incredibly well on the charts, but also seeing 6ix9ine kind of jump into this Latin pop trend was of course going to make waves too. So even though my feelings on these singles have been mixed, some I've liked, some not so much, I have to admit the artistic choices Tekashi has made on these tracks from a marketing standpoint have been pretty genius. However, listening to the entire album now, I can't really say the quality is there. Again, there were a few cuts going into this record that I knew I liked, and a few more that I picked up along the way that I thought were pretty good. The opening track, Stupid, with Bobby Shmurda is a banger for the ages, with a pretty eccentric beat, a ringing and catchy little synth line. 6ix9ine's flow is loud, it's in your face, some of his lyrics on this thing seem pretty self-aware and referencing the fact that he is silly, that he's such a viral phenomenon of sorts. The song essentially revolves around his utterance of stupid, which through multiple viral bits of social media has kind of become his catchphrase in a way, his calling card. It's almost like 6ix9ine's let's get it. I also like the random bits of his flow on this track, the dum 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 dum, again sort of adds to the ridiculous and colorful quality of the song. Bobby Shmurda's incorporation into the cut is actually kind of creative. It might have been short, but it added to the track for sure. The track Kika featuring Tory Lanez is another highlight for me. It's like a tropical trap rager with these fun little steel drum synth lines. Tory Lanez over much of the track is singing this really bold and rubbery vocal line and a ridiculous hook.
I do my own stunts, Jackie Chan with it.
It's easily one of the most fun moments on the record, and I think one of the few spots where vocally Tory has really stood out to me as far as a feature goes. 6ix9ine's flow on the track, it might not be that different than a lot of what he's recorded up until this point, but I don't know, it's still pretty great. There's just something really groovy and head-bobbing about how he flows on top of a trap instrumental. It's not too basic, it's not too complicated. He finds a nice middle ground and he's right there in the pocket. And just to give you a whiff of the lyrics on this thing, mostly it is violence, it's materialism, it's sex, it's completely tasteless. There's a line on this thing where 6ix9ine says, Ray Charles, John Cena shit, I can't see the bitch. So that gives you kind of an idea of the dark, nasty attitude, but also slightly humorous that you do get for the vast majority of this record. The aggression, the callousness. One more cut that stood out to me on this thing was Kanga featuring Kanye West, not only for its bustling throwback bling era beat, but also Kanye's performance on this track is ridiculous. His lyrics are like a mix of a highbrow and lowbrow. It's like gold-plated trash. Explaining the appeal of this track is hard because it's so ridiculously out there and bad that it's almost good and great and raw in just how uninhibited it is. I mean, I think you really have to not give a shit about what anyone in the world thinks to record and write Bang 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 and Chicken Wang Bang. Yeah, I know you love how I put it down, bitch. Admittedly, though, when 6ix9ine says that lyric, god damn it, I am here for it. Tati is probably the major last highlight on this record for me, which features a beat from DJ Spin King. Boy Wonder and Q Beats are also on the instrumental as well. It features these weary, sad little, I think, string samples kind of woven into a pretty standard bit of trap percussion. The flows, for the most part, are kind of recycled from previous tracks. I mean, 6ix9ine even revisits his infamous blicky sticky flow for a little bit. Although at this point when he does it, it's like he knowingly embraces the meme of the whole thing. And, yeah, it's meme rap. I'm listening and enjoying meme rap right now. One more thing I will give to this album, though, is that I like how on the track Wando's 6ix9ine has Scott Storch producing a beat. As clueless as 6ix9ine seems most of the time, and maybe his choice to do this wasn't entirely his own, but to have a totally underappreciated legend like Storch on this record, I think, in a way, does say a lot. The keys and those synth lines on this track are pretty great, but outside of that, I'm not sure who else Storch is working with these days as far as production goes. So, you know, those are kind of the highlights for me on this record, but that's really just a handful of songs. There are 13 tracks on this thing in total, and a great deal of them I don't think are very good. There are a handful of cuts on this thing where 6ix9ine invites on vocal guests and rappers who either give horrible performances or outshine him because the rap style he has taken on that particular track is not very distinct, because when he's not screaming his brains out, 6ix9ine doesn't really bring all that much to the table vocally. I'm talking about cuts like Fifi with Nicki Minaj, where, again, as I've said in the past, 6ix9ine doesn't really stick out on this track. His voice awash in autotune, his kind of pronounced eighth note flow, which reminds me of a track from Corey Feldman's Angelic to the Core for some frickin' reason. Yeah, on this song, he doesn't really have that strong of a presence. And again, this is one of many moments where this is kind of the case. Tekashi, shockingly enough, is easily outshined by Lil Baby on the track TikTok. Even with Lil Baby once again sounding like a poor man's Young Thug impersonator, he still has more flow, more melody, and a bolder vocal presence than 6ix9ine does on his own track. Actually, I would say Lil Baby is pretty much the reason the song is as appealing as it is. The song Waka is one of the shorter tracks on the record at 2 minutes and 8 seconds, and a great deal of the mic time on this song is spent with A Boogie With A Hoodie's awful singing voice. So not only am I listening to a subpar performer for the majority of this song, but 6ix9ine barely has any presence on this track. He's barely here. Sure, he's as loud and as out there and as in your face as possible, with a bunch of gunshot sounds kind of backing up a lot of his boom, boom, boom shouts. But as far as lyrics and flow go, this is one of his least interesting performances on the record. 6ix9ine once again foregoes the screamed vocals for something much more toned down on the song Mama with Nicki Minaj and Kanye West, and once again, he is the least standout performer. And on FIFA featuring Gunna, it's like him and the dude are in a competition to see who can sound the most boring. Probably the sleepiest and least fulfilling song on the entire record. The closing track, Dummy, featuring Trife Drew, kind of suffers from the same issue the Boogie track does, just way too short of a song with an awful vocalist taking up way too much of the track. Then there's the matter of the two Latin pop cuts that 6ix9ine works into this record, both of which feature Anuel AA, the first of which Bebe dropped earlier this year. I already kind of gave my opinion on this track. 6ix9ine's nasally auto-tuned singing is terrible. It's garbage. It's trash. I mean, the beat isn't bad. I respect the fact that he is singing in Spanish on this song and that he went in this direction stylistically and that it did so well for him, but honestly, it's not that great of a track. Especially with Anuel's vocal performance here and on the next song as well, and I can't say I care for him that much as a vocalist. Like, yeah, he has pitch, he can hold a vocal melody, but he has this really weird, moany, emotionally flat delivery that sounds like he's singing with a mouthful of water and he's trying not to swallow it or spill it at the same time. He just wants to maintain it there in the bottom of his mouth. I mean, he's easily the better vocalist on both of these songs, don't get me wrong. So in that respect, his singing is not as unbearable to listen to. And to some listeners, he's most likely going to sound like a good singer because he's literally being put up against vocal trash. But honestly, to my ears, there's not really anything all that redeeming about listening to these two tracks just locked in the middle of this very, very hit and mostly miss album. So, yeah, I mean, there are a handful of highlights on this thing. The Kanye features are cool. The beats, mostly, can be fire,
But, yeah, the songwriting is not really there. 6ix9ine barely shows up for a lot of these tracks. There are a lot of horrible guests. The whole thing just sounds really low effort, really cobbled together. I sort of take him at this point as just like a social media personality who also happens to make music. I'm feeling a strong 4 to a light 5 on this thing.
Hey, buddy. It's track reviews.
I'm going to be talking about this newly released single from the one and only Grimes. It looks like a new record from her is going to be on the way soon, and she is teasing toward that with this new cut, We Appreciate Power, with Hannah. New single, new Grimes, new year coming up. New album on the way. Let's just see what's going on. No further ado. We appreciate power. Ba-bam. What? What? What was that? Oh my God! God damn it! What is Grimes doing? This is great! I loved this. This was fantastic. Grimes is bringing new metal back, y'all. Grimes is bringing that new metal shit back! In a way, it kind of reminded me of some moments from Poppy's new album, specifically the track that Grimes is featured on. Didn't foresee Grimes heading in that same new metal, alternative metal, heavy metal direction with her own stuff, and yet here we are, I guess. Wow, okay. So let's just start again with the genre, the style. I mean, you do have some elements of Grimes' typical very wintry, atmospheric, spacey pop vibes, I guess, that you typically get out of her stuff. Of course, her last record, Art Angels, came off a lot punchier and a little more colorful and in your face and abrasive. And it seems like she's kind of heading further down that road with this new cut over here. And but of course, that typical sound that we expect from Grimes' stuff, that's mixed in with these heavy new metal guitars, chunky riffs, wailing. Yeah, it's a pretty friggin' heavy song. It's a heavy song, and she matches that really well with these really eerie, breathy, creepy friggin' vocals. It's kind of spine tingling in how creepy and eerie and freaky it feels. It's a pretty lengthy cut at 5 minutes and 34 seconds, obviously not the longest song in the world, but it, a sizable cut nonetheless. There was a point around like the last leg of the track when I was like, okay, we're getting back to the chorus, but like what else does she have in store here? And she sort of threw an extra refrain in there for a little extra flavor that really kind of brought, I think, the eeriness of the track home, sort of saying Neanderthal to human being, evolution, kill the gene, biology is superficial, intelligence is artificial, submit, 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 submit. If you couldn't tell just from a surface level observation of the lyrics here, there's a lot of themes of authoritarianism, futurism, technology kind of taking over and replacing human beings, or rather human beings extending their power and their lifespan through technology. There's even a point on the track where there's a lyric that stood out to me. Come on, you're not even alive if you're not backed up on a drive. So yeah, you do have those elements of power, of government, of authoritarianism, and then that's mixed with like human beings' minds being uploaded into the clouds, cyber organisms, human-machine hybrids. it's kind of heavy and dystopian and industrial in a way.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really anything I didn't love about this track. I thought the lyrics were great. Thought the vocals were, again, I'll just say the word eerie, a little freaky. I thought that the industrial, heavy, nu metal vibe of the track went over really well. You know, sure, like it sounds like a lot of stuff typical of the previous decade as far as the nu metal world goes, but there's something a little heavier and artsier and more abrasive about it. Like, it's not as corny and formulaic as much of that music sort of grew to be. I was hoping to hear a revival of these sounds at some point in this decade, and I'm glad it's coming back in such a thoughtful and a tasteful and a freaky fashion, I guess, with this new song over here. I loved this. I thought this was fantastic. This is one of my favorite singles so far this year. Grimes snapped on this shit. And I think I'm just going to leave it at that. We appreciate power. You know, before I go, I'll say, you know, there's something about this song that kind of reminded me of that old sort of nu metal band Orgy. Grimes strikes me as somebody who is probably like an Orgy fan, you know, and maybe a touch of Evanescence in there too, but mostly like I got huge Orgy vibes off of this cut. But I could dive into as much nu metal as I used to listen to in high school for hours, and I'll spare you that. Anthony Fantano, Grimes, We Appreciate Power. Hannah, new single, loved it. Forever. Let me give a shout out to one more sponsor this holiday season, our affiliate link with the good people over at Turntable Lab. turntablelab.com/theneedledrop is a place you can go to buy colorful pressings of records I reviewed on the channel, either that or a turntable, some speakers, some audiophile gear, whatever you're buying off that page, we get kickback from it. Supports the podcast, supports the YouTube channels, and you get some nice records, some nice equipment for, I guess, kind of just treating yourself or somebody else who, you know, might be interested in such things this holiday season. Again, that is turntablelab.com/theneedledrop. It is where you want to do your online music shopping this Christmas season. And thank you. Here's the next review. We have two new songs from Chicago's own Mr. Chance, the rapper, over here that he has just dropped on SoundCloud, The Man Who Has Everything, and My Own Thing, featuring Joey Perp. Let's give these songs a shot. Let's see what's up, and see if we can glean anything interesting from these two new cuts. All right, but bam, let's get it. Okay, first of those two tracks, The Man Who Has Everything. Really enjoyed that cut a lot. I thought it was actually really great. One of Chance's more emotionally stunning tracks in a while. And I remember there was at least one moment where he was kind of shooting for a track with a somewhat similar emotional quality in that last batch of singles that he dropped. But on this occasion, I think he really nailed it. Essentially, the point and the message of this song is that Chance, at this point in his career, he's successful. He's rich, he's famous, he has everything he could want, essentially, or needs, and he's trying to reconcile that odd position with essentially trying to be a regular guy, a family man, a Chicagoan, a guy who just basically loves his city and sympathizes with those who, you know, for no fault of their own, have not seen the success he's received in his lifetime. Pretty powerful sentiment there, I would say, generally. Really heavy, rich, harmonious instrumental. Love the very weary and sort of tear-jerking little vocals, chipmunk vocal sample that plays occasionally through the song. Love that kind of ringing, somewhat warped little guitar that sort of plays these very slow chords throughout the track. The beat is very chunky. However, it's not really an aggressive song. It sort of hits this very slow somewhat sluggish pace to kind of match the dejection that the song is feeling, essentially. And Chance, finally, his rapping on the track is pretty understated. You know, definitely not one of his more melodic or uppity in-your-face performances or anything like that. But the way in which he kind of delivers his verses so quietly and so in such a somber fashion, it makes you focus on every single thing he's saying, every emotional point, and every cute little bit of wordplay that he throws out there too. So all around, great track. I mean, I'd love to hear it on a tape. I'd love to hear it on an album. You know, good, all around good song. Let's get into the next track, My Own Thing, Joey Perp. Given that it is Joey, I'm imagining there's going to be some kind of energetic counterbalance here. Maybe this is the banger, the hard hitter. Who knows? We'll see. My Own Thing, ba-bam. Okay, Chance the Rapper, My Own Thing, second of those two tracks. Yeah, definitely not as memorable or as impactful a song as The Man Who Has Everything, in my opinion. But I think it actually kind of goes off that track thematically in a way, because I think it also kind of speaks to this desire from Chance to, in a way, I guess, separate himself from the pressures of the industry and the success that he has been saddled with as a result of his meteoric rise to fame. There are some really happy-go-lucky, carefree vocals on this thing, some really poppy, chimey, fun, very upbeat pianos, bing, 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 that, you know, play to a very inspired and very smiley sound, I guess. And it just kind of seems like lyrically Chance is rapping about turning his phone off, just basically turning off the world, turning off just everything that comes with being the rapper and the brand, in a sense, and the icon that he is today. Yeah, I mean, it's okay. Joey Perp's verse didn't really feel that weighty to me. The beat to me got a little annoying after a while. And I guess if there's one thing that really kind of stood out to me on the song, it's some of the vocal harmonies. They were really kind of soaring and rubbery and dynamic. They might be a little nasally and obnoxious to a degree, but they were still kind of sweet and endearing, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, my least favorite of the two tracks, yes, but certainly not an awful song. Not awful by a long shot. You know, dug it, but not super crazy about it. And those are essentially these two tracks, two pretty decent songs from Chance, or rather a decent track and a particularly good track. I wonder how long Chance is going to kind of be on this singles wave, you know, because it would be great in 2019 to hear something a little bit more complete, you know, album, EP, something from Chance. Hopefully it happens sooner rather than later. And hope you guys have had a great year, because it's December almost, and it's going to be 2019 sooner than we frickin' think. So actually kind of crazy to think about. Thank you very much to everyone for listening to this edition of the Needle Drop Podcast. As a lot of you guys know, on the Fantano channel, we do a regular series called Let's Argue, where I go over your hot takes, your unpopular opinions, your tough questions. I respond to the best ones. This week's episode has left us with a few little extra exclusives that we have placed in this podcast specifically. If you would love to hear me respond to hot takes from across the musical spectrum, you can go and check out every episode of that series on youtube.com/Fantano. But for now, here are two little extra bits from, again, the latest episode. And here you go. Let's argue.
Drummers don't get the same amount of recognition that vocalists, guitarists get, and it's saddening. Let's not forget about them bassists, too. I was about to say, you know, the drummers, yeah, they don't get as much attention as the guitarists, but the bassists over here are like in the fucking basement. Drummers don't have anything to complain about when it comes to bassists not getting the attention they deserve. But honestly, the reason this is that people most likely gravitate toward the musician and the band that they
relate to the most, and relation does have a lot to do with how much of an understanding you do have with the instrument that that particular person in the band is performing with. Most people who listen to records aren't musicians, and they listen along and they sing along with the singer. They sing the lyrics, so of course most people are going to identify with the singer, the front man or woman, the vocalist. Of course, behind vocalists, a lot of people are guitarists, so of course a lot of people are going to enjoy those guitars, especially since they usually carry the riff, the groove, the melody. That could be keyboards or piano too, depending on what sort of group or artist that you're listening to. And yeah, I mean, fewer people than that are drumming, are bass playing, so, you know, just kind of is what it is. It's the musical pecking order, I guess. I'm not upset about it. I mean, all that really matters to me at the end of the day is that I enjoy playing bass. Whether or not the rest of the world understands or enjoys the bass is not really all that relevant to me. I like playing it. I enjoy it. I like hearing it. And that's really ultimately all that should matter. Remastering classic albums more than once doesn't serve any purpose and is a pointless cash grab from labels because they know diehard fans will cop a new vinyl for their collection. I mean, I don't agree with this. I think it's totally situational, and it depends on how the remaster comes out, how the new remaster comes out. The one that sticks out in my head most recently is the new Beatles White Album remaster. And yeah, that remaster sounds unlike any other remaster of that record that has happened up until that point. There are new details in that record that are now being heard for the first time because of that frigging remaster. Of course, there are a few tracks that, in my opinion, were ruined in the process of this remaster, but, you know, it's only a couple of songs. It kind of balances out into the pros with how many tracks are on that thing that actually sound kind of vibrant and new again. And look, I love the classic old school version of the White Album. I'm not going to give up my copy of that record, and honestly, I'm probably not going to ever splurge on a brand new copy of the remaster or anything like that. If I ever want to hear it, I'll just listen to it over, you know, a streaming service. But that being said, I think a remaster, another remaster, a third, a fourth, a fifth remaster can be just fine, but it depends on what that remaster brings to the table. Was the last remaster missing something for whatever reason? You know, it depends. It's case by case. And that will do it for this latest edition of the Needle Drop Podcast. Thank all of you for listening. Make sure to hit us up on social media, twitter.com/TheNeedleDrop and AFantano on Instagram. Also, our YouTube channel is youtube.com/TheNeedleDrop and youtube.com/Fantano. Also, TheNeedleDrop.com is a place that you can hit up to keep up with all of our postings throughout the week. And shout out to Jonah for continually assembling and putting together and getting together each episode of the Needle Drop Podcast. Make sure that if you are listening to this podcast on whatever platform you get your podcast from, you are leaving us a like, a favorable review, subscribing, that sort of thing. And we will catch you guys in the next one. You're the best. Kisses, hugs, forever.